This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
On Saturday, the coronation of King Charles III was held, ending with a concert that included Katy Perry, Lionel Richie, and Tom Cruise. I tell you what, I loved what Katy Perry was wearing. It looked absolutely amazing. Well, many of us watched it. I admit I didn't. And the conversation is well underway as to what role the monarchy should or shouldn't play in Australia. Well, putting that aside for now, what does a king actually do? Jess Carniel is a senior lecturer in humanities from the University of Southern Queensland. Jess, welcome to Joy Drive.
Thank you for having me.
Jess, before we talk about King Charles III, historically, what was the role of the monarch?
Historically, the monarch was the person who ruled the land. So they actually governed the nation. They had to uphold the rule of the law, and they were often involved quite actively in defending the nation. So they would be at war. Obviously, try and protect your monarch as much as possible. And this was a highly masculine role when they were at the front line. But they were very, very active in governing and protecting the land. Whereas now, it's a little bit different.
So what's different about the monarch now?
Now it's far more symbolic. So they still stay as the head of state. And for those of you who watch the coronation, will have seen the oath that King Charles made to protect uphold the rule of law and also to lead the Church of England. So they still make the same vows around that kind of governance, but the king doesn't make laws anymore. They give their royal assent for laws to come into power, but they don't have any role in determining what that law looks like. That is the role of the parliament to determine that. So they sign them into action, but don't, you know, shape them in any way, shape or form. So the kind of governance that we see from a monarchy today is a lot more distant and a lot more symbolic.
When did the role of the monarch change to be more symbolic from that of one actually governing?
This is back in the 17th century, where, you know, we have the British Civil War. And so that, you know, led to changes in the British governmental system. And interestingly, that's around the time that we have the first and second King Charleses. So it's a little bit auspicious for us to have our third King Charles now, and especially when people are starting to question the role of the monarchy.
Could the king, if he wanted to, could he intervene in institutions like, you know, the British government or you know, the Church of England that he heads? Could he intervene if he wanted to?
The constitution actually restricts what the monarch is able to do. There have historically been a couple of instances where they've, you know, managed to use their influence to do certain things like dissolve parliament, which is within the king's power, but it's usually to be done at the recommendation of the prime minister. They can also withhold their royal assent on legislation. And I think the last time that happened was with Queen Anne, so a very, very long time ago. So these are things that they can do technically, but they're unlikely to do in actuality, and certainly very unlikely to do now, because certainly what we've seen with the modern monarchy, and this was something that Queen Elizabeth certainly upheld, was that they are supposed to maintain a apolitical and impartial relationship to the sitting government.
We're chatting with Jess Carniel, Senior Lecturer in Humanities from University of Southern Queensland, about what the king actually does. You just mentioned about sort of maintaining that impartiality. And of course, we saw what happened here in 1975 with the dismissal of Gough Whitlam's government by the Governor General. And I suppose that question of impartiality was there, wasn't it, until the palace letters were exposed or found?
Absolutely. There were massive questions about the extent to which the palace had intervened in that decision in any way, shape or form, especially seeing around that time was also a rumour about whether or not the then Prince Charles would be interested in coming into Australia as the Governor General a little bit later after that. So there was this interest in Australia and its goings on, but the palace papers did reveal that ultimately, although the Governor General was keeping the palace up to date on what was going on and they were quite interested, At the end of it, it was actually the Governor General's call to dismiss the government.
The British Prime Minister, I believe, meets weekly with the King. What sort of matters are discussed? And I suppose, what's the purpose of that meeting if the King, you know, doesn't have any say over the British Parliament?
The King can provide advice and guidance, but the Prime Minister has no obligation whatsoever to follow that. So it's really just a bit of a sounding board for the Prime Minister more than anything else, and it's a tradition to keep them up to date. So in addition to that weekly meeting, on a daily basis, the King receives the little red box, which gives him an update on what is going on in Parliament so that he is apprised of political matters and understands what is happening in that nation, but he can't actually intervene or should intervene.
I don't want to get into a discussion about a republic here because we're finding out what the King actually does. But if we look at Britain, what benefit does the monarchy provide to Britain then? Like if the PM meets and really can walk away and say, you know what, I'm not interested in what you've got to say. I'm just doing my own thing. What's the point? What is the benefit that the monarchy brings to Britain?
This is a thing that we call soft power. Right. And the monarchy has a really strong role in the nation branding of the UK. This was probably more so under the Queen, where she became iconic, not just in the UK and the Commonwealth, but worldwide. She had a very recognisable profile and way of speaking that was, you know, both, you know, sent up and also admired globally. So they actually contribute a lot to how people see the UK and understand the UK. And so part of what that can bring, and they were certainly hoping for that to be the case with the coronation, is that it can bring in tourism and through that money. So they are a kind of cultural draw card for the UK.
Right. And the King is also the head of the Church of England. What about other faiths? I mean, you know, it's quite a multicultural society now, you know, in Britain and indeed us. So what, does that sort of put a bit of pressure on him to consider other faiths as well?
Absolutely. And this has been a key point that King Charles has raised since the 1990s, when he was still the Prince of Wales, where he gave an interview saying that he would be the defender of faith rather than of the faith. So in that way, he was trying to be inclusive of the multi-faith society of multicultural Britain. So we can certainly see that that's going to be something that represents his kinds of values as he rules over a monarch, because that's part of what they do, is they try and, apolitically as possible, protect some of those national values. So he will be advocating for that multi-faithness, but at the same time understanding that, you know, he is the head of the Church of England, that is the state religion. So he has a particular responsibility to that. But by being more inclusive around other religions, that's a really interesting way of trying to draw them and have that sense of connection to the monarchy.
We're chatting with Jess Carniel, Senior Lecturer in Humanities from the University of Southern Queensland, about what the King actually does. Now, the King, I understand, is also the head of the armed forces. So does he have any say, let's say, you know, Britain was at war, does he have any say in what the armed forces do?
No, he doesn't play any sort of strategic role. He doesn't even determine whether or not the country is going to go to war. That's something, again, that is the role of the parliament. The King, however, will be the one who announces publicly that we are at war and will announce the war is over. So that, again, it's a kind of a symbolic ceremonial role in many ways. However, the King, but the royal family as a whole, play a really quite important role in maintaining national morale throughout wartime periods. And we saw that in particular in the Second World War, where as soon as she turned 18, then Princess Elizabeth joined the Auxiliary Territorial Service and trained as a mechanic. And that was something that she held with great pride, and certainly was something that was very, very useful for the monarchy to promote as part of their home propaganda to maintain that national morale.
So what, just coming back to Australia now, what powers does, I mean, we obviously know that we've got the Governor General there representing the King, but what can the King do now? Could the King essentially dissolve our Parliament?
That is the role of the Governor General. Whether or not there is a conversation between the King and the Governor General would be a really interesting one, but technically, no, they're not supposed to intervene. The Governor General is located here in Australia, and, you know, the other nations of the Commonwealth have their own. And so that's supposed to be a domestic matter.
Fantastic. Great chatting with you, Jess. Thanks so much for joining us on Joy Drive today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That's Jess Carniel, Senior Lecturer in Humanities from the University of Southern Queensland.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.